back up the countdown shortly here, and H minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. Today being Saturday, the 12th of April in the glorious future year of 2025. And the 12th of April is, of course, a very important date. Yes, friends, if you will recall, it was, holy moly, 64 years ago on this date that Yuri Gagarin became the first human being to orbit the Earth, launched from the Baikonur Cosmodrome, which is not anywhere near Baikonur, but is near Tur-Atam in Kazakhstan. And then, 20 years later to the day, not by any planning, but by a series of coincidences, that was the first launch of the space shuttle. Yes, the U.S. space shuttle orbiter Columbia, the first reusable spacecraft. Also, it has to be said, the first reusable spacecraft to disintegrate on re-entry because it was, you know, reusable manned spacecraft to disintegrate on re-entry because it was, you know, old and worn out. So, yes, today, the 12th of April, is generally celebrated by the space-loving people around the world. There is a sort of informal holiday known as Yuri's Night. The idea is to go and have a party. Now, I don't know whether I will be attending the Yuri's Night event, which is going to be held in Irving, Texas, where members of the National Space Society chapter, which I'm a member of, will be attending. And that is partly because, of course, the burial service for my grandmother was yesterday. And so I don't know, again, I don't know if I'm going to be attending the event here, but there, you can look it up on the web, Yuri's Night. There's a whole long list of parties. Find the one in your area and go. You'll probably meet some interesting people. Of course, for those of you in east of the Greenwich Meridian, that advice probably comes rather too late. You know, Rolly's already Sunday morning, so he'll have missed everything. Sorry about that, Rolly. Now, let's see. Anything else to report? Well, I must report that while I was gone, there was a considerable amount of mail that came for me, one of which was a request from somebody in Magnolia, Arkansas, for an assortment of stickers. And that person was kind enough to include a U.S. $5 bill in addition to a self-addressed stamped envelope. So I should probably send whatever nice things I happen to have, you know, some good stickers. Because I have, of course, my own stickers that I have produced, and then there are other stickers which have come from other places, which I have collected. And some mail from Tobe. Here's a couple of envelopes. One says, I bought a sandwich that was powered by toast, but the bread was not toasted, just powered by toast. Lots of BTU and toast, I guess. And subjoined to this is a receipt from a sandwich shop, which indeed says at the bottom, powered by toast. Very curious. And then we also have some test prints from gas station printers. A couple of Murphy USAs and a real good one here, which tells you things you'd rather not know, perhaps, about how your, you know, gasoline is being dispensed. It says NCR, that's of course National Cash Register, not No Carbon Required, although the two were fairly synonymous for a long time. NCR self-serve checkout Scott app system initialization 2025-0328. So, a couple of weeks back. Current program file C:\Scott\Bin\ScottAppU.exe. File size 6788096. File date 2020/03/24. File time 14:22:19. So apparently your gasoline dispensers are working on. What Microsoft Office operating system do you suppose that is, right? What do you suppose that is? Do you think it's Windows 95? Maybe it's good old MS-DOS. How should I know? No, too many characters in the file name for MS-DOS. And then another thing from Tobe. So there's a discount coupon for what calls itself the largest glow party on Earth, for the Glow Circus, the Cardin International Glow Circus. I don't exactly understand what they're advertising here, but from the pictures and descriptions, it looks like in the Mid-America Center in Council Bluffs, they had brought in animals, so they had animals, and then painted them with luminescent paint, and maybe had black lights set up to activate it. Because they've got a picture, like a picture of a buffalo and a picture of a elephant, and they're both surrounded by a glowing halo. The idea of painting a buffalo and an elephant all over with luminous paint gives me the heebie-jeebies. Not that I think it would be bad for them, I think it would be bad for me. If you ever remember the old Far Side cartoon of the two guys out in the woods with a bucket of paint and a brush and this very irritating-looking moose, and they've just finished, you know, wiping paint from the brush all over the moose, and one of them says to the other, "Hold on a second here." He's looking from a book entitled Wildlife Painting. He says, "It's supposed those were supposed to sand between coats." But yeah, the largest glow party on Earth. See amazing BMX action, exotic animal rides, shimmering face painting, breathtaking high wire thrills, mind-blowing globe of death. There's a picture indicating somebody being shot out of a cannon. Picture indicating, you know, BMX tricks, and the mind-blowing glow of death appears to be a BMX thing where they have a steel wire sphere, and then people, the BMX riders, get up to a high enough speed that the centrifugal force over... Sorry about that. Still adjusting to being home again. It appears to be a wire mesh sphere where they're able to ride around, you know, once the BMX riders get up to a high enough speed, they're able to round it right around in arbitrary directions because they've overcome gravity with centrifugal force. So that's intriguing. And then we have a marvelous, and this has apparently got delivered to Tobe recently. It says, dear new postal customer. Now, as far as I know, Tobe has been at this address for a very long time, so he's not exactly a new postal customer. The growth of suburban areas and the shift of population from one geographic area to another has created new challenges for the Postal Service. To meet these challenges and to meet our responsibility to provide reliable and efficient service to the nation, the delivery regulations were changed in 1978, to eliminate door delivery as an option for residential areas. Current delivery options are curbside or centralized delivery provided by motorized carrier service. We do make exceptions, however, under certain circumstances. For existing residential neighborhoods, the mode of delivery varies according to local postal policies agreed upon between the labor unions and certain neighborhood associations. If you are moving to or have recently moved to an existing residence within Omaha or its surrounding areas which previously had door delivery, you must move the mail receptacle to the curbside. I mean, here's the thing, right, that, I've got door delivery at the house, and if they came along and told me, if you've recently moved here, you have to move your mailbox, I would say, I didn't recently move here, I've been here all along. We appreciate the opportunity to explain our position on door delivery and hope that we have given you a better understanding of our responsibility to provide efficient mail service to all of our customers. Delivery service is our main mission, and we want to deliver your mail as much as you want to receive it. Please install a mail receptacle at your curb for mail delivery within 2 weeks from the date on this letter. If weather is not cooperating, you may install a temporary mailbox. There are various ways to do this. If you are unaware of how to achieve this, please contact us. Your mailbox needs to be 44 to 48 inches from street level, and the front of the box needs to be flush with the curb. If you prefer, you have the option of receiving your mail at a post office box. Well, firstly, you don't. Because many people still, if you try to buy things, they still often say, we don't ship to post office boxes. Which is nonsense. Firstly, anybody who sends by U.S. mail should ship to post office boxes. But in many cases, they don't. And secondly, private courier services, you know, they do deliver to post office boxes. In many cases, the private courier services hand off to USPS for last mile delivery anyway. So, of course, they deliver to post office boxes. But still, many of the people you buy from, mail order online kind of thing, will say, we don't ship to post office boxes. Secondly, you cannot use the post office boxes as your address of record. Banks and people like that, they really don't let you do it. So I'm not best pleased by that. Let's see, and there is a fascinating meditation exercise entitled Babel. It says, perform the following sounds in any order. Some of which are very challenging. There's one that uses a spiral, and I wonder if it's supposed to go, that's my interpretation of the one with the spiral. And three things. Deep listening exercise entitled Babel. 2. Postal letter with false postmark for moving mailbox. 3. Glow circus. Tobe says, the first photograph of the second camera ever built was probably of the first camera. You know, that's a very interesting thought, and it's not one that I'm able to confirm or deny right now, because I have, of course, in the other room, a book. It's my dad's book, actually, but he won't mind me borrowing it. A book which includes the first photograph ever taken. But, so far as I know, it doesn't include the second photograph ever taken, and it's not clear to me that the first photograph ever taken was actually taken with anything we would regard now as a camera. And let's see, there's a letter, some personal correspondence here from my dear friend Heather up in Montreal, which includes a couple of her art prints as postcards, which is nifty enough. The envelope is made out of what I think is wallpaper. It's got it's this wonderful dark red with gold, and then it's got this embossed pattern of flowers, peonies, I think. Flowers on stalks, with the leaves and everything. And, you know, it's got quite the texture to it. And it's heavy paper. Like I say, I wonder if it was meant for wallpaper originally. Not sure. And then there's a note from SDFer Christy O'Twisty. Hi, Christy. Dated 18 February, which is in an envelope which she made from a page of a magazine. Looks like it might be Sky and Telescope or something. Anyway, it's nebular. You know, it's a huge print of an astrophotograph with stars and star clusters all over. Pretty nifty. And then, what else is there here? Oh yes, and there's a note from my good friend and whom I got onto SDF, Kuma. Just a note wishing you better times, talking about a discussion of something we may do in the autumn, traveling around Europe again. I'm going to see about maybe getting another Eurail pass. Is there anything else important in the pile of accumulated correspondence? One thing that is of some importance SDFer WX Boss, if you are listening to this, the most recent piece of mail that I sent to you came back undeliverable, so I'll be sending you an email soon. X1 is suggesting that people should probably sample my reading of mysterious official letters, such perhaps Pizza Pal. I'm completely down with that, by the way, but if you are going to sample my voice, I don't have a problem with that at all, but I'd like to know about it, so that I can listen to whatever show you do it on. You know, I just want to hear what you're doing. That's all. I don't think that's unreasonable at all, is it? Okay. Now, what all is going on in the world, and what do I want to talk about? Well, the first thing I want to talk about, following on from last week's show. Now, I don't want to give you the impression, if I did give you the impression, it was certainly a false one, that I am happy with the situation, with the economic situation in the U.S. But the thing is that there's an old saying, it's not the fall that kills you, it's the sudden stop. When you have been in a situation for decades where you have a large trade deficit, suddenly implementing measures that are meant to change that is likely to do more harm than good. And that's true in any size economy. It's also true, however, that the rules which apply to very large and very small economies are different from the rules which apply to medium-sized economies. You know, the Principality of Liechtenstein is an obvious example. If the Principality of Liechtenstein tried to impose protective tariffs, it would be an abject failure for the simple reason that there aren't enough people in Liechtenstein to produce, even at beyond full employment, all the things that are consumed in the Principality of Liechtenstein. You know, they use cars there and buses. Well, the average car plant employs more people than live in all of Liechtenstein. Not to mention it produces enough cars that they would have to export 95% or more of their production, or everybody in Liechtenstein would have to buy 20 cars a year, which doesn't make even the slightest degree of sense. Right? Well, for very big economies, the rules are different also. Different in different ways, of course, but the United States, as one of the biggest importers in the world of consumer products, imposes protective tariffs against the import of consumer products. Well, firstly, the U.S. doesn't currently have the supply chain, the industries built up to produce those consumer products. The U.S. produces the machinery that produces those consumer products and sells it to the countries, to people in other countries who buy it and use it to produce those consumer products. So obviously, that same machinery can be used in the USA, but the loss of income, because if the US isn't importing those consumer products, the factories that are manufacturing them, if the US is something like a third of their whole global output, the factories that are manufacturing them are going to go bankrupt, right? And they're not going to be able to sell to anybody in the world because they'll be shut down, which also means they're not going to be buying the equipment that they buy. And so there's a likelihood not only that there's a sudden loss of national income from the exporting the heavy equipment, because remember that the U.S. has a large net trade surplus in expensive things. Basically anything... Let's see, any item with a single individual price above $10,000. It's in that range. You know, the U.S. exports machine tools and all kinds of equipment, up to and including, I used to be able to say, airliners. Of course, I'm not going to say right now that the U.S. trade deficit is entirely due to the failure of Boeing to be able to make an airliner that the wings stay on, but it certainly doesn't help that one of the major export markets, airlines, right? They buy very expensive airplanes, airplanes that cost millions or tens of millions of dollars. They buy hundreds of them a year, and, you know, sure, those airlines are going to be looking somewhere other than the U.S. for their supply, I'm afraid, because Boeing can't keep their act together. You see, the overall problem here is that when one of the largest countries in the world changes its trade policy suddenly, it throws the whole world economy into disorder, resulting in rapid price fluctuations and all kinds of other undesirable macroeconomic phenomena on a global scale, which in many cases are likely to be worse for the country enacting the protective tariffs than if they'd just left well enough alone, even though the pre-existing situation, the status quo ante, is very unsatisfactory. You know, this is... none of this is really news. The plain fact is that the United States has not had an industrial policy of any kind for a long time. And if you were to formulate an industrial policy and then set out to implement it, it would probably be implemented in stages. And the first stage would absolutely not be imposing a 54% import duty on most imported goods. Any more than your first step toward saving fuel in your car would be to dilute your gasoline with 54% of distilled water. It's simply not a reasonable thing to do. That said, I think that anybody who is looking for the present United States government to do reasonable things is... I think you're kidding yourself. Okay. That's not what the current United States government is for. I'm sorry to say it, but it's not what it was elected to do, and it's not what it's doing. The current United States government is all about unreason. This is the feast of unreason. These people are not doing things because they make sense. These people are not doing things because they accomplish a goal that the ordinary person anywhere in the world would think of as something that they wanted to achieve with their lives. They've got something else going on. Now, you're going to ask me what it is that they have going on? And I'm not going to be able to answer you. And the reason I'm not going to be able to answer you is very simple. You see, in order to answer that question, I would have to try to simulate in my mind what's going on in their minds. I just don't want that in my mind, even a simulacrum of it. I mean, that may seem rather unkind, that may seem rather cruel, but it's true. Whatever it is that they have going on, I don't want it in my head. You know. So that's my viewpoint on the sort of the big headline items that you may have come up with recently. Now, what else am I going to say? Well, I mean, there's actually a lot of good news in the world. It's just most of it isn't coming from the United States. Now, we are hearing about a number of different things in the United States that will be positive if they actually do happen. But whether they happen is as yet unclear. And if you want an example, So I'm sure I mentioned this a while back, that I had been in a conference call thing, you know, video conference, where the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign was looking to take its old coal-burning utility plant, you know, combined heat and power cogeneration plant on campus, and install an eatsy-beatsy nuclear reactor instead. Well, that nuclear reactor was supposed to be provided by a company called Ultra Safe Nuclear Corporation, USNC, whose chosen technology was a prismatic fuel, helium-cooled, high-temperature gas graphite reactor. Well, USNC sort of folded, but the project went ahead. They sold, USNC's stuff was sold off to somebody else. This is what usually happens. You know, in a growing industry, there are lots of, you might call them startups or new companies, many of which fail, and their work in progress is sold to somebody else. And so the investors in the first company lose a big chunk of what they invested, but the work goes ahead. This has happened much less in the space field and in the nuclear energy field than elsewhere, but it is a very common pattern. Anyhow, you know, you look at all the Panama Canal companies which failed until finally, you know, and so the investors in the first, what was it, three Panama Canal companies all lost their money. But the canal got built. Anyway, besides that, announcements are that it appears, at least, that the UIUC microreactor is going to move ahead. And I'm very, very pleased to hear that, for several reasons. One reason is that it means the prismatic fuel high-temperature gas graphite reactor technology is coming back after a long time of dormancy. And it is a very useful and desirable technology because it produces heat at a quite high temperature. 1,000 degrees centigrade is practical. And with 1,000 degrees centigrade coolant temperatures, it's practical to make 800 degrees steam. You wouldn't use that for power generation, of course. It uses it for thermochemical processes, such as I've often mentioned before, turning waste plastic into feedstocks for making new plastics from. So that's good. Also, it represents the first time since the 1960s and the Piqua Atomic Power Station in Ohio that a nuclear reactor has been used to replace a coal-fired boiler. One-to-one swap in an existing facility. That's very, very desirable, right? Just to show that it can be done. That could lead on to future projects of a similar character, where existing power plants, the parts that last a long time, the transformers and turbines and such, are left in place and you just replace the steam source. And then thirdly, it will be a power-generating nuclear unit in a built-up populated area. You know, the UIUC campus is a major population center in downstate Illinois. So, anyhow, if you'd like to send me mail and possibly have me read it out over the air and possibly send you something in return, that address is Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas, 76101, United States of America. And if you address it to Man and Adam, it'll probably go through just fine. If you'd like to support these broadcasts, you could always send me money if you don't want to send it by mail. PayPal.me/PrometheusLives for a one-time, or Patreon.com/man5.